Welcome back, and thanks for joining us again for part two of our conversation with Tammy Rhimes. If you haven't listened to the first one, start there. You can listen to this and go back if you want, but it's really good information in our last episode about the best practices of a cooperative, what they do, what their benefits are. And Tammy Rhimes, she is the executive director at National Cooperative Procurement Partners. And Tammy, we left off on the last episode with a question on this trend for schools and universities putting bids out for cooperative contracts. It's basically a bid for a bid. I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
Well, and I could see different ways to research. So to me, there's three key ways to research a cooperative. The first is just to pick one cooperative, like E&I Cooperative Services. I'm going to vet how you put your bids out, how you do your evaluations, all your I want to look at every contract you have, because I'm going to fully vet E&I, and you are going to be one of my go-to cooperatives. So you can research by the co-op. Maybe you can research by the supplier. So let's say there's a lot of heavy equipment or MRO companies or office supply companies that have multiple co-ops. So in this case, what I would do is provide my market basket or what I need to purchase and say, okay, I realize you, company A, have multiple co-ops. I want you to do the research. And based on what I am, city, county, K through 12, whatever I am, as well as what I'm buying, tell me which one of your cooperative contracts would be best for this purchase or future relationship. And then the third way is you just have a need. We need to get our air cleaner. I have no idea what that means or what that entails. So I'm going to reach out to all the cooperatives and say, what kind of contracts addresses air? And then I start from there. So there's different ways to do that. The phenomenon that you're referring to, I call a bake-off. It's kind of like you bring all of these cooperative contracts and do a bake-off. I can say that should be done or could be done on a smaller scale, but once it's starting to take weeks and months of comparisons, you're into a formal bid process then, and so you're not really saving the time or the efficiencies that you probably wanted to at the beginning of this.
I see that. And you're right. There may be some cases where you need that, especially in the initial researching phases of what you're doing, maybe an RFI where you're trying to get some information in. There are definitely ways when you talk about vetting them, I think there's some best practices there too when thinking, okay, well, how do I know if a cooperative is a good one? And a few for me off the top of my head, and I'd like to get your thoughts, Tammy, is if they've been around for a very long time. I know E&I has been around, 90 some odd years. Some other cooperatives have been around for a long time. There's new ones popping up all over the place. They're not bad. At least I don't know if they're bad or not, but they're not really proven themselves yet. A long-standing history of good service in the industry. I also think you can look at what they specialize in. There are cooperatives out there that really specialize maybe in healthcare, right? So if you're a healthcare institution, you might gravitate toward that, or hospitality. You might gravitate toward those cooperatives that are hospitality driven. E&I is just education. That's all we do. So if you're in education, you would probably gravitate toward this. Do you have any other thoughts on that? Maybe like NIGP accreditation or...
Actually, NCPP, we put together a roadmap to a cooperative procurement strategy. And what we did was go out across the country to talk to procurement shops all over and said, so when you decide to piggyback on a cooperative contract, what are your due diligence questions? What are the questions you ask about the contract, about the co-op, about the vendor? And then some starting questions for yourself and your own entity. And those are pulled together, and you can find those under the education tab on our website. And this is great for someone who might not have done this before or don't know the right questions to ask. I mean, things like, what's the expiration date? Well, if the expiration's in 3 months, you're not really helping me because I need to make this decision again in 3 months. But can I see all the documents? Can I see your process? All of these are basic questions that you are allowed to ask as part of your due diligence.
Yeah, Tammy, I know you're working on something and you don't have to share it if it's too soon, but you're trying to quantify what that looks like as far as a bid or an RFP, a formal solicitation, and really putting a dollar amount to it. I think that is really beneficial because it almost gives you a go or no go. If you're trying to decide to bid something out or use a cooperative, understanding what your opportunity costs associated to one or the other really may help make that decision a lot easier. It might also help with some guidance too with your staff, right? Your buyers or people that are under you that are just running at such a high pace. We know that we're having a really hard time filling seats in procurement So we need people to do more with less, right? We've heard that quite a bit. We need them to be as efficient as possible and utilizing a tool like a cooperative, because it is a tool. It shouldn't just be a default go-to necessarily, I don't think, but it's an intelligently decided tool to use to make you more efficient at what you're doing in procurement. Do you want to share anything about what the work that you're doing on that?
Sure. We are typically a resource-strapped department, procurement is. We're sort of the hub of the wheel. However, we're not always given all the resources, tools, or personnel that we need. And right now, many are faced with that. And so one of the things to look at is, as you're looking at your workload, in particular, your upcoming expired contracts, let's say you have a list for the expired contracts for the next 6 months. Looking at that list, there's things that are important, but let's admit it, they're mundane. Things like, you know, fleet vehicles, tires, office supplies, furniture. Everybody has done bids for that in the past. Why would you spend your limited time and resources doing something that everybody else has already done? So maybe take a percentage of those contracts and say, you know what, for these, we are not going out to bid. We are making a conscious strategic decision. Instead, we're going to go out and research cooperative contracts to replace our expiring contracts. But then there may be a few, for whether for operational or political reasons, or just because it's a pilot study and so it's something unique, you have to put that out to bid. And that's where you need to put your time and resources. So on any given day, procurement kind of needs to be strategic on where you're putting your resources and brain power, so to speak. And cooperatives really help with the stuff that you've seen before, or sometimes even the more complicated things like uniform contracts, food contracts, IT contracts. I mean, you can't possibly think of every scenario, every SKU out there. Well, the cooperatives do, because they have to serve the entire country. So they've pretty much thrown anything and everything you possibly need in that contract. So it kind of covers you as well. So you're not caught short after you put your own contract out there and think, oh, shoot, we forgot this one item. Well, the cooperatives probably can be a gap filler for you. So it's part of building a strategy and being a leader in procurement.
Yeah, there's a lot of great resources on your website, and we'll link some of those on our website on E&I. There's a very cool document that you have that kind of shows the bid route, and it's a great visual. I'm a visual learner myself, and it's a great visual of what it looks like to kind of do a bid versus what it looks like to do a cooperative. So I want to clarify, in procurement, it's very difficult. You do have a tough job to do. You want to make sure that you're not only doing right financially for the university, but legally, right? You want to make sure the indemnity and all of the different clauses are in there. And so there is still work to be done when you use a cooperative contract, right, Tammy? It's not just the easy button where you just, oh, I just use it.
Sure.
There's still vetting, right? Oh, there's still work that's being done. It's not like your job is being outsourced to someone else completely.
Of course.
But it is making you significantly more efficient at what you are doing, right?
Sure.
You know, I hear that, Tammy, from business partners. We're like, well, just use a co-op. It's easy. Well, yes, but they still have to read the contract. They have to vet it. They still have to do their own due diligence to make sure that it is the right vehicle for that university. So there's work to be done, but it does. It cuts off, man, you know, 60, 80% of the workload that you might have to do otherwise.
Yeah, of course. And there's always, I mean, you're going to want to, I would look at the terms and conditions. I would look at indemnification language. There may be some things you need to have discussions with that supplier to maybe put an addendum on the contract to make sure that you're covered or your assigned counsel is happy with you using this contract. But again, there's a little due diligence, but compared to the months-long solicitation process, I would say it's a much easier, much faster process. Especially for those customers who are pounding on the door virtually or physically and saying, I need my stuff now, particularly at the end of the fiscal year, as you're trying to close down the books and you have that one faculty member who has $50,000 left in their budget and they have procrastinated to the bitter end and you've got 3 days left in the fiscal year. You still have to purchase for that individual, and this may be a quick way to quickly get what they need, but still stay compliant with all of your procurement policies.
That's true. You know, while you use another contract from a cooperative, it doesn't mean that you can't add your own local terms and conditions. You might have city, state, county laws that need to be addressed that maybe aren't fully addressed in the cooperative contract. And that's what you should look for also. I know with the E&I contracts, there's room for that. It's the base contract that really gives you really good overall terms and conditions, but you might have local terms that you need put into your own PO terms. And that can also be put into the agreement and agreed upon by the business partner. You're not stuck with a term that you don't like or you don't like the wording of, it absolutely can be modified and adjusted for what you need locally. And that, again, brings you the national power of a big, giant contract, but also customizable to what you need locally in your community.
Another big point for me, and this is just a personal point, I want good customer service. In this day and age of getting voicemail messages, or you can't get someone to return your email or phone call, to me, I like to work with a cooperative who gets back to me quickly. Even if they don't have the contract that I'm looking for, letting me know that helps me, you know, continue my research with someone else. So a big point for me, and you alluded to some of the newer, smaller cooperative organizations that have started in the last couple of years. And that's great. Competition is always good, but I always want to make sure that they have a good customer service base to help me and any other entities who are calling in with questions or need assistance.
Yeah, one final thing I'll mention is really transparency. If you can't access the contract documents easily, or they're difficult to get to, or they don't really meet your needs, if they're just sort of one size fits all, that would be something to look for. You know, if somebody has the same exact contract for everything that they're procuring out there, just do your due diligence. Make sure that the transparency is there with the documents. You know, Tammy, in the last bit that we have left here, I kind of want to learn a little bit about what's happening with NCPP. Where are you all headed? What's happening? How are things changing? Where is our industry headed? What new trails are you all blazing?
Well, the cooperative industry is alive and well and growing exponentially. In particular, during the pandemic, when everyone was sent home to work, a lot of procurement teams didn't have the same resources, either an e-procurement system or all their files that were easily accessible. So many of them relied on co-ops like they never had before, whether it was PPE products or special, now they needed to give every student a laptop computer as they were sent home. Whatever the need was, even those that hadn't used cooperatives in the past or their attorney kind of poo-pooed that option, suddenly it was wide open. Get those products any way you need to. So you have to think all of those people who were using cooperatives during the pandemic have become quite comfortable with it and are going to continue that in the future. In fact, suppliers are also seeing the benefit because they don't have to respond to so many individual RFPs. Many of them are looking, if they don't already have a cooperative contract, they are competing for them to have them in their future portfolio. But some of the trends that we're seeing is education is a big thing. And this is not only on the procurement side, but suppliers want to understand it as well. We just did an annual survey to our membership. And they will always want the basic 101 because you'll always have new people coming into the field. However, the most requested training for the future are trends and new ideas on the horizon. Procurement wants to become more strategic. We want to be the one at the table who's offering the solutions or ideas rather than just being reactive. We want to become more proactive. So at the upcoming NIGP, we are rolling out a full-fledged cooperative track with a first-time badge you can earn in cooperative purchasing with tests and all of that. We're hoping to also partner with other associations across the country where we are offering either keynote or breakout sessions, and we're doing this in the Canada and the U.S. And then in addition, we have a couple of projects we're working on. One is a best practices. We do have a white paper that was published from Harvard University about 5 years ago on whether cooperative purchasing is a good thing or not. And actually it said it's a great thing. Now we want to take it to the next step where we have a best practices paper for those who are convinced, okay, if I'm going to use cooperatives, now I need to know the next steps. What are the best ways to take advantage of this? What are the due diligence questions to ask? How do I check all those boxes to make sure we are in alignment with our department's needs as well as our legal counsel? So we're producing that, and that should be out in the next couple of months, and we'll make a big deal about that. And then the other is, and David alluded to it earlier, one of the questions I routinely get asked, how much does it cost to conduct an RFP or a bid process? Both soft costs and hard costs. And you'd be surprised, nobody seems to have the answer. I have reached out to all kinds of institutions, so we've decided we're going to figure this out. So we are rolling out in June a special project starting with 100 entities. In fact, if anyone's listening in and wants to be a part of this project, please reach out to me. We're going to have different entities, and this is all the way from cities to higher ed, and say, we want you to track hours of how what you're spending, and it doesn't matter if it's an entry-level buyer, a supervisor, the manager, the CEO, whoever it is, what their hours are, and we're going to start to extrapolate that kind of details to put together a range. So if you're a smaller entity, this is your range. If you're a larger entity, this is your, we may even get as complicated as, do you have an automated e-procurement system? Are you doing this old school, all by paper? By this fall, we hope to start producing those numbers that you can use when you're trying to convince your own teams and your own management of, hey, we need to bring in an e-procurement system. Look at the difference in the pricing. Hey, we need to automate more or allow us to use more cooperative contracts. But now you'll have dollars behind those discussions, which can be very powerful.
That is powerful. And I think that's excellent. I think it's going to be a great tool. And I like the approach that you're going with this, because I know people have tried this in the past, but I don't know that they went through the rigor that you're going through to really come up with a good median average of what the true cost is to put out a solicitation, because there is opportunity cost there. There's that time, that expertise that could be spent somewhere else on certain bids. So understanding that before you get into a project, I think is going to be a huge help to many, many people out there.
You know, I'm excited about it too. I'd like to know the answer.
Well, Tammy, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Sure.
We could spend hours, we could spend weeks, we could spend months talking about all of this. Tammy Rimes is the Executive Director, National Cooperative Procurement Partners, and E&I is a proud founding member of NCPP also. So we've been excited to have a longstanding partnership. We're excited for what the future holds. Thanks for listening to another episode of Cooperatively Speaking. And you can listen to several of our other podcasts on any of your preferred streaming platforms, or you can go to our website, www.eandi.org/podcasts. You can also email us and give us your feedback or make suggestions on other episodes you'd like to hear at podcast@eandi.org, eandi.org. We'd love to hear from you.